Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday evening. But it is a Tuesday, and today on the podcast, we're going to talk with USCFootball.com beat writer and columnist Dan Weber about what's going on with this football team. Of course, trying to put a wrap, a bow on the Steve Sarkisian stuff. We're not going to spend too much time on it. And get to a lot of your questions. And as you can imagine, a ton of your questions came in this week. Podcast at uscfootball.com is our email address, or you can leave us a voicemail at 641-715-3900, extension 816-646. Or go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. You can click on the left side of the page and leave a voicemail there. Plus, you can see all the old episodes. We put all of that stuff up on peristylepodcast.com. And download the, you can subscribe to the podcast and download through iTunes, iTunes.com/Peristyle Podcast. Any podcast app, usually you can go through iTunes and get the Peristyle Podcast. And please leave us some positive feedback. That would be wonderful. And it's a great way to listen to the show if you want to go for a jog or you're in the car. I started listening to podcasts a lot more that way now, so it's been pretty cool. So let's bring in Dan Weber. Dan, it's been a crazy few days. We're supposed to have a couple days off. That did not happen. But yeah, crazy couple days at USC.
But we did get an apology from Sark about making us work on Sunday.
He did.
So that was might have been the absolute high point today. And and we're going to get, and I say we, the media, we're going to get to roam the sidelines now, all the way to the 50-yard line, since there are no parents and no more fans. So, it's kind of like, we've got the place to ourselves now. Although, when you got 10 TV trucks, they took the whole, you know, McClintock from one end to the other practically today and stayed there all day, which was kind of interesting. They're doing, you know, those guys were going out to get something to eat and coming back and they were filing all day long. It was, pretty amazing when you watch one of these, things go viral in front of you. You just think, man, they just can't get enough of it.
That's true. And I wanted to, we'll start talking about that, but I want to thank our sponsor, Michael Moline Real Estate. So Michael's been great. You can go, we'll see him at the Coliseum soon, those first three home games, because he does stats for the USC football team, but he also does real estate here in Southern California. You can go michaelmolinerealestate.com or give him a call at 310-275-4688. And we'll have some more information from him on the end of the podcast. So check that out for sure. And so we don't want to belabor this. And you know, I don't think we're going to talk about this too much more unless something else comes to light. It's such a polarizing topic, Dan, and so many people write in on one side or the other, and they're not even close to each other, that we don't talk about it enough or we talk about it too much. I guess there's no right way to do this, but we wanted to talk more about football. We'll get into this. I want to read some comments that came in. I'm not going to read everybody's question. There was just too many of them, but I wanted to touch on like a few high points, I guess you could say, Dan, and maybe get your take on it. People can listen to what we talked about it directly on Instant Analysis up on uscfootball.com. So we went about 7 minutes there, and we'll probably spend a little bit more time here, but is that okay? I'll read a few comments from some of the people for you.
That sounds great.
Okay. So Bob Crockett, 1975 from Menlo Park, he was basically writing in saying how disappointed he was in not only Steve Sarkisian, but also Pat Hayden. That we've seen that kind of theme a lot. Dennis in Brussels said that and this was referring to Monday's podcast, because we didn't talk about it enough. He was calling us quote unquote homers, that we were sweeping it under the rug. And Coach Harvey Hyde and I actually talked about it quite a bit. And that was before Tuesday's press conference. So this is after it. So we want to talk about it again. We want to talk about it when it's newsy. We don't want to just kind of belabor the point. And there's Steve wrote in, when do the issues with the athletic department start sticking to Pat Hayden? Gabe wrote in saying, hey, this is no big deal. This is overblown. And we've seen that said quite a bit, Dan. People think, why are we even talking about this? You shouldn't talk about it at all. So as you can see, there's like people on both sides of this. Juice in San Diego. He was questioning Sark's leadership going forward, that wasn't sure with what he did if players would follow him. Jeff in Lake Forest is going through a divorce himself and feels like that there's a lot of stress there and feels that that could be linked because of the amount of stress of Steve Sarkisian going through that divorce. We've seen that theme repeated a few times in some of these questions. Robin Ukaika, he said it started with the scrimmage when he was talking about, you know, when he pointed to one of the reporters saying that they think that UCLA is tougher than us, and then he wasn't really happy with the performance, and then the divorce and all kind of piling in. So he felt that stress kind of started out through the day, and that's probably what was the catalyst. He doesn't think you should fire Sark, but he thinks that Sark might have burned through any equity he had, and I thought that was a good point. And then the last one, JD in DC thought it was too much stress, and he, because of this, there's a lot of stress, he shouldn't be the offensive coordinator anymore. So I think that kind of touches most of the topics, or I guess the points, Dan, that people have been writing in. We get a lot of these, but I just wanted to kind of throw it all out there, and then we can kind of discuss a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one thing that probably the one that I would not agree with are the people that say that it's just this way, way, way overblown. I just don't think, I think it's a serious deal. I think it really matters. And I think we ought to look at it as if it matters. And it's not a, you know, it's not the fault of the media. It's not a, you know, publicity generated kind of a deal. It's not people trying to take shots at USC or anything like that. I think it's a serious deal and it ought to be, you know, taken as such. And I don't think it's easily, you know, put behind. You know, you got to pull for Sark. You got to pull for anybody, you know, in that situation. And you got to hope that, I mean, I think the football team comes first. And that's a, you know, 100 and however many guys are going to be, when everybody, you know, walks on and all of that this week. That's an awful lot of guys. And that's a lot of people who put in a lot of effort and over a lot of years. And this is a chance to really, you know, get where they wanted to get without the NCAA, you know, pulling them down. And it is something that they're going to have to overcome a little bit. And I think today's practice, you know, showed a little bit of that, that you know, it was lingering, no question, lingering for Sark, lingering for the team. And you wish they didn't have to do that. So I just think for anybody to say that it's overblown, I don't think so. And for those who say, well, we haven't heard about a whole lot of things, blah, 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 then that doesn't mean that there aren't issues that really do have to be dealt. I mean, just the very fact that they decided, you know what, there won't be any more alcohol in the coach's locker room. And that's a step forward. I mean, there are just things like that, you know, there may have been some blind spots, you know, around the program that people just didn't pick up on maybe as much as they should have. And maybe this will be a way, you know, that can all happen. So I mean, I think at this point you want to say, let's use this as something, you know, to say, we see it, we recognize it, we're going to do better, we're going to, you know, get past it, this is going to, you know, work in our favor. The team's going to come together. Coaching staff will be more, maybe more efficient. You know, maybe, some new role, you know, way in which, say, let's start does what he does, that he can see it differently in terms of his own, you know, participation in how the coaching goes and all of that. And we saw a little bit of that, you know, today. I think a little bit more administrator and, you know, overseeing, you know, different things or moving from one to the other and being kind of trying to be a motivator and that kind of thing. So we'll see, you know, how this all plays out. I don't think we can possibly know at this point how it plays out. But one thing I would like to see is, especially on the boards and places like that, if a couple of people see it differently, it's not because the other person is a bad person or the other person deserves to be attacked because they don't see it the way you see it. It's just that they don't see it the way you see it. I mean, there are probably a bunch of people on there that don't see it the way I see it. Now, I realize they can't see it the way I see it. I see it through, you know, my own eyes, my own experience, my own, you know, everything. And I understand that. And they're not bad people because they see it the way they see it. But I think there is a tendency on this issue for the first time that we're seeing people say, you don't agree with me, you don't see it the way I do, you're a bad guy. And that has to stop, I really think. That's just talk about what you think, what you see, but not the other guy's got bad motives or he's, you know, an idiot or whatever, or he's a hater. You know, you could be, you don't have to be a hater to say you're not happy with something the way it's going and you'd like to see something different or better. So anyway, that's my 2 cents worth there.
Yeah, no, and it's a common thing. We started to see this, Dan, you know, on the Peristyle with Lane Kiffin, and it usually ends up being the people that are kind of, supporting the head coach no matter what, and the people that didn't want the head coach around to begin with. And we saw there was, you know, Lane Kiffin was pretty polarizing. And I think Steve Sarkisian, it's fair to say, was pretty polarizing as well. There was a lot of people when he was hired did not agree with it. And they're kind of hoping, you know, looking to see what happens. But then something like this happens. And then those people are like, see, I told you we shouldn't have hired him to begin with. And the supporters are like, this was a one-time thing. You're making a big deal out of it. So it ends up being kind of a rebirth of an old fight, I guess you could say. But I agree with you 100%. And if people need to understand, there are just so wide ranges. I mean, I've had national media members calling me all day. Like, yes, I mean, people are asking about it, and they have different views. The boosters we talk to have different views. All the users on USCFootball.com have different views. It's okay to have different views, but you have to understand that you may think really strongly one way. There's someone that thinks just as strongly the complete opposite way, and it's mostly like that on this kind of issue, Dan. I'm not sure why, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of middle ground. It's always one extreme or the other.
I'll say one of the groups that has gone pretty much one direction, it seems to me, are the football players who were there from the 50-year anniversary and the 25-year anniversary, the 65 and the 90 teams. I do not think they were very pleased about how this went down. You know, on a night when you were honoring them and very much they're into, you know, the history and the tradition and in the kind of a reverence for USC football and we're seeing it up close. I think they were, those would be people you want to respect their opinion about this and they were not pleased.
Yeah.
And this was on their special night. And for a lot of people, that's a special night. And yeah, and I think you have to make sure those things don't happen. And you wish they'd go back and do an analysis of all the things that happened to allow that to happen and figure out how that doesn't happen ever again.
Yeah.
It just can't. And, you know, for all the reasons that it can't. But, you know, I guess the thing you want to say is use this to make positive steps going in a lot of different directions. Do not use this for something for recrimination. You know, there will be people who say, well, this wasn't the right way to handle it, or going forward, this isn't the right way, or I see, you know, trouble or whatever. I think at this point, you basically got to say, how can we make this right? How can we make this happen? What can anybody do, you know, here to make something good happen out of, you know, something that wasn't so good? And I don't know that we any of us have an answer for that, but I think that has to be where everybody is right now, instead of just trying to, you know, tear people down who don't agree with you.
I agree 100%. So hopefully people practice that on the message boards. Okay, so we want to talk some regular football stuff. I don't think we're going to broach this subject again unless, of course, some more news breaks. So, you know, for the people that want to just hear about 24/7, I'm sorry, we don't want to do that. And for the people that never want to hear about it anyway, I'm sorry, but we have to talk about it. It's big news. It's not being a dead horse. It just happened today, so we needed to talk about it. But we're going to move on and talk about some football, Dan. So let's jump right into the questions. Kevin in South Orange County, he said, Dan, would you share your thoughts on Jordan Simmons and Kenny Bigelow so far in camp? Very curious to hear how they're doing and if they'll be big contributors this year.
I'm not sure about, you know, Jordan. Jordan's got all the tools that, you know, you would need, except for the fact that does the knee handle the stress? You know, that's a big, you know, 6'4" and, you know, 300 almost 330 pounds. and he developed some fluid on that, you know, surgically repaired knee. And, you know, we noticed, you know, last year that that was never, I don't know that he was ever really healthy last year. And, you know, he got some fairly heavy work, you know, a week ago, and, kind of, you know, at that point ran out of, the ability to use that knee without getting fluid and swelling up and limiting his mobility. And, you know, so I don't know. He's certainly got the skills to play there, and he's got, you know, the body, with the exception of that knee. As far as Kennedy Bigelow, he's, you know, he's got, at 285 pounds, he couldn't look any better. He's certainly, you know, hanging in there, working at it. He needs to be able to be more, you know, as flexible as he could possibly be and disengage, you know, blockers and get to where he can make plays. And that's not an easy thing to do, for Kenny. Kenny's kind of, you know, and he's been working and doing yoga and doing things like that to, you know, increase his flexibility. But if he could, you know, and there are players, I mean, I remember Devon Kennard, as athletic as he was and all the ways he looked good. It took him 3 to 4 years before he really became a guy who could make plays. He would get close. He would, you know, work hard and do a lot of good things. But, that's where I think Kenny Bigelow is just figuring out. I mean, I think he'll be in the rotation. I think he'll be on the field. And, you know, it might be just a case of, you know, finally getting some game action and really, you know, just getting into the swing of things. He had a couple of years where he hasn't played any games, and he had only 4 when he was a senior in high school. So, you know, this is a kid that, you know, there's some rust there. But, you know, I think both of them, we will see when we see, with, you know, where do they end up? Both of them, if you look at them, you'd say, man, this guy looks like he can play. So, you know, I wouldn't say they can't, but they haven't yet. And, we're going to find out this year.
All right. Cole in Vegas, he says, hey guys, love the podcast. Can't get enough of it. Thanks, Cole. My question is for Coach Weber. So you're Coach Weber now, Dan. I like that.
Thank you.
Used to be a coach anyway. The tight end situation. With Cope Fitzpatrick not playing as well as Bryce Dixon, who do you expect to step up in the tight end spot, and do you think there will be a position of weakness? Thanks so much. Love the podcast. Appreciate the work you guys put in. Keep up the good work, Cole in Vegas.
Well, we saw Taylor McNamara, the Oklahoma transfer from San Diego, graduated in 3 years in Oklahoma. After about 10 days or so, he started to really figure things out, started to get the offense and the terminology. And it was a good thing last week he stepped up when, Connor Spears kind of took a little, you know, got himself out of action for a few days. Then the last couple of days, the scrimmage and today, Connor Spears came back and made some big plays. And then Tyler Petit is basically every time he has a chance to catch the football, that freshman, he's got baseball player hands. I mean, he's just got those real soft hands. So that gives you 3 guys with kind of a distinctly different, you know, skill set. I think Taylor's got the, you know, is a blocking tight end at Oklahoma, essentially, but he started to catch the ball. Connor is, you know, 6'6", 255, and catches the ball well, runs good routes, working on his blocking. And then Tyler is a real mature-looking freshman. And so I think with those 3 guys together, that's a pretty good position now.
All right. Thanks for that one. Let's go to Tarek. Coach Steve Sarkisian said Saturday that those who played in the scrimmage were most likely to play during the fall. Did you see John Houston play? And if so, what were your thoughts on him?
I think John Houston that's a good, that's a flip of coin, it seems to me. I know people were today looking at who had the black shirts on in the scout team and who, you know, possibly does that translate to black shirt to red shirt? And I don't think so in all cases. And he may be one of those. And I know the last time he talked about him, Sark was very, you know, impressed with, his physicality, the ability of a 6'3" and 220 plus pound guy to do some things. But the fact that they were thinking they could play him, you know, as a backup with Uchenna Nwosu for for Sua, but that's one thing that's complicating that is the last few days is Quentin Powell has looked so good, you know, at that spot. So I don't know. That would give you four guys at Sua's spot at that, you know, outside linebacker, a strong, you know, stand linebacker. So I don't know if Quentin keeps playing the way he's playing, where do we, you know, where do you go with a true freshman? I don't think we know the answer to where John Houston is going to end up. He's really good. He's got all kinds of ability. I wouldn't want to necessarily predict that.
Okay. We're going to do a voicemail question. Here you go.
Hey, guys. This is Ian in San Francisco. Love the show, just like everyone else says. This question is for Dan. I was just listening to the most recent podcast where you were talking about tackling on the team, and despite the fact that there haven't been many tackling drills, you were saying that in the scrimmage, the tackling looked really good, and that because we have such top caliber athletes, that assuming they know how to lean and their body positioning, they'll be able to tackle. But I just want to point out that in 2012, I believe that when preseason number one, we had all the best athletes in the world, although with a sanction in place, that we weren't tackling in practice, and then when it got to games, we couldn't tackle at all. So I was just hoping to get your feedback on that. And again, thank you very much, and love the show. Fight on.
Yeah, I didn't catch his name in San Francisco. Did you catch? I wanted to say that's a good question and a perceptive one. And I think it's really one of the issues you have to decide on how you're going to deal with it as a coach. I think the thing that I liked always so much with Pete's teams is they tackled well because they practiced full speed and very competitively. Not long, but they were really going hard when they were out there, and they didn't need to do a lot of tackling at practice. And I don't think the 2012 team was limited because they didn't tackle. They were limited because they didn't practice hard. They didn't practice fast. They didn't simulate. I thought, you know, the thing that Pete was ahead of fast farther than anybody else in his era 10 years ago was that they simulated game conditions with the competitiveness and the speed, you know, with which they practiced. That to me is the key. The tackling will take care of itself. But if you're going slow, and you're also, you know, not tackling, it's easy to say, oh, the problem was you weren't tackling. No, I think the problem was you weren't simulating game conditions. You have to practice game condition, situations. And not just a situation, but it has to be kind of a tempo, an attitude. All of the things that you are going to do in the game, you have to be able to do them. You have to replicate them on the practice field. And these guys are good enough athletes. If they run to the ball, if they run, you know, they gang tackle, if they run as a group, they're going to tackle people. But the key is if you go slow in the week, if you're trying to save yourself, if you're trying to, you know, keep the numbers up, and that was a difficult issue. Always they were trying to decide what do we do to keep the numbers up. And if that, you know, causes you to back off a little bit, even, you know, unintentionally, where you're not even trying to, but the players do just because there's nobody behind them. That's the problem. So I think the tackling takes care of itself if the practices are high speed, competitive, and absolutely game conditioned. I mean, under Pete, those guys used to say game conditions were a step down, that they were going harder in practice sometimes and they had to go in games. So I think that's the key.
All right. Melvin wants to know, since you've seen quite a few practices, including those with pads, has anyone stood out as a big hitter out of the group of new players?
Let's see. I think Biggie Marshall, I think, will hit you, and he really wants to hit you, and he would, you know, very much like to hit you. I think, you know, running the ball, Aka Cedric Ware, I think he doesn't mind hitting you at all. Porter Gustin, he's going to run over you. I think he doesn't get a chance to hit many people because basically he's rushing the quarterback and they're not allowed to be hit. So, he did hit, unfortunately, I think one day he didn't realize Ricky Town stepped up in his way and he just sort of obliterated, you know, Ricky Town. I think Cameron Smith looks like, he will absolutely hit you. We haven't probably seen enough of the big defensive linemen where they're in situations where they can just absolutely deliver a blow. I think you mentioned John Houston, Osa Messina. I think all of those guys, look like they're definitely willing to, you know, to deliver a blow. I think Akili Ross, in the secondary is another guy who will come up and hit you, but, there's a decent number of hitters, you know, in this new, this freshman group that have come in here. I think that's probably, off the top of my head, that's probably most of them.
Okay. Let's see. I want to get Dan Weber's opinion on the play of Cody Kessler in fall camp. I haven't heard much about his play this past few weeks. Really? Well, you must not be paying attention. How does Dan assess Cody's progression in his third year as a starting quarterback? As always, you guys do a great job covering USC football. Thanks a lot. And it's Suas, I believe. Suhas.
Okay. Suas. I think one of the things he's done is, he's taken some more chances. He's, I think more able. I think he really worked hard this spring and summer, basically, to see all the possibilities of all his receivers. So I think his ability to distribute the ball, you know, sideline to sideline, short and deep. I think he's worked on the deep ball. Absolutely. The play action stuff. I think they're going to, you're going to like seeing some of what they do there. But, I think arm strength has improved. He probably, and whether, you get that same 39 touchdowns to 5 interceptions ratio, I don't know, if you can even expect, something like that. But I think there are ways in which he can be more effective. He actually probably will take off with the football more this year as well, where he'll, if you've got, you've dropped off on everybody and, I don't think he'll take quite as long to say, to tuck it in and take 5 yards if he can get it. So I think we kind of take Cody maybe for granted after last year. And so, I've been pretty pleased, but I think one of the things when you're watching the quarterback is Max Brown has had such a good camp and has done so many good things. And we realize now, wow, we knew it, but we didn't always, didn't get to see it until now. So I think a lot of the attention, and Sam Darnold, I think those guys have gotten a lot of the attention. So we just expect Cody to be Cody. I think he's been more of a leader, more vocal, done a lot of, a lot of good things that probably get taken for granted mostly, as you would expect with a, quarterback that kind of does things the way Cody does.
Okay, we actually have two running back voicemail questions, so I'm going to play them back to back if that's okay for you, Dan. Is that cool?
Sure.
All right, here's the first one.
Randall in Dallas with my question for Dan. When it comes to the running back situation in Dominic Davis, since he got run in the final scrimmage, is it safe to expect that he does not redshirt? And what about Isaiah Langley? Has he played himself out of a redshirt, or does he need more time to develop and wait? Thank you for everything that you and Ryan do each week, and enjoy the podcast.
And then I'll play the other one. I know there was an Isaiah Langley thing in there too, but I'll play the other running back one.
Hey guys, fight on. This is JG Trojan. Just a quick question about the running backs. Curious about what kind of playing time we can expect and how it'll be divided between the returners, Davis and Madden, and the three new freshmen. I'm pretty excited about those guys. And just curious what we can expect to see in the backfield. Thanks. Fight on.
Okay, as far as the running backs are concerned, Dominic definitely has played his way out of a red shirt. I don't think there's any question about it. But I'd be surprised if any of those guys red shirt. We didn't see Ronald Jones Tuesday, so I don't know you know, if there's, you know, whatever that, you know, reason, you know, was, but I would think it would be similar to the 2 years ago when they, you know, when Tommy Robinson was running back coach and for our guy in Dallas, Tommy's at the University of Texas now, but he figured a way to get all five of them in. And there were ways in which you had to run, you know, use all five of them because, you know, guys get hurt. And as we see it right now, you know, they're being fairly protective of Trey. Justin is, you know, got that upper rib cage and, you know, not back in pads yet at all. And, today, you know, all the work was pretty much done by, you know, Dominic Davis and Cedric Ware. So I think you're going to see all five of them. I think it's going to be different from week to week, but I would like to, you know, say, look at 2 years ago, look at five running backs and, you know, a number of them young guys and see how that went and, you know, watch it, happen maybe again this year.
You know,
Isaiah Langley.
Okay.
Isaiah Langley may, I don't know that they can play four freshmen in the secondary. I would maybe be surprised. And we're looking right now, Marvell Tell and, you know, Iman Marshall may both, you know, have a chance to start. And in that situation, I'm not sure if, Yekeli, hurt his, shoulder or right arm today. And, Isaiah, was with the scout team. So, that might be the breakdown right now that maybe you can't figure out how to get all four, you know, freshman defensive backs on the field.
Ronald Jones thing, I came in kind of late. I was working on all the videos for practice, so I didn't get to come in till late, but some of the writers were talking about that he might have had a Tuesday class at like 9 o'clock that was not very well timed.
I heard that, and I'm going to wait till tomorrow. That just almost doesn't seem possible.
Right.
but maybe. We'll find out tomorrow, I think. Yeah. I mean, it looked like some people saw him early and then he was gone. So, and with the whole, you know, Sark press conference and all that, it was a little difficult to pick up everybody at the beginning. But we didn't at the end see him doing anything. So, but that would be odd because Tuesday is the big, you know, work day and full pads work day. That would be an odd scenario for a freshman running back.
Yeah.
Probably needs as much work as possible, but we'll find out maybe a little bit tomorrow.
All right. We got a couple more. Rusty, says, many are stating the obvious that there's a different feeling around the program this year. Over the last few years, many fans, me included, hoped we'd get lucky and win a few tough games, but it's starting to sound like we are ready to forcefully take those wins. It seems as though you are genuinely excited about and confident in the possibilities this year. Are you seeing a dominant force rise again? We'd like to hear from Ryan on this as well. Rusty.
Well, I mean, it's a force that's got a lot of talent, a lot of young talent, a lot of speed. Speed we haven't seen. It's got the numbers that you can tell that the coaches have a confidence level that they did not have last year. They were coaching defensively. They were coaching not to run out of gas at the end. They were coaching, you know, it was a group of coaches for the most part had never coached a scholarship limited team. So I think that was over above everything that they were doing in terms of practice, in terms of games, in terms of second half. Whereas this year, I don't think that factors in at all. I mean, I think they look pretty much everywhere. And, you know, the one position that they thought, oh, my gosh, how are we going to get through, was tight end. And now they look and say, gee, you know, we got three guys that look like they're capable of starting. So things are... there's a different look about this team, a different feel, and a different sense of we have the answers. I mean, when you run out of bodies, like 2 years ago at Notre Dame or whatever, when you didn't have anybody to throw the ball to at the end of the game, they were all gone. You don't have any answers. I mean, there's just not much you can do at that point. You get the sense that they don't think there's any place where maybe they don't have answers. They may be young answers. they may be, you know, answers that, you know, aren't proven. But in terms of the numbers and the rotation, you know, they feel like, they can stay on the field with anybody. And it's not so much stay on the field. I think this year, you know, they don't feel like coming out in the second half, they're going to have to, you know, just try to get through it and hope they can, you know, hold on. You don't have any of that sense of that's going to be the way they approach any game.
All right. We got one last one. He says, what do you think is better at what they do, USC's offense or USC's defense? Also, is the starting offense and the backup defense plays against the starting defense and the backup offense? If they played, who would win? So I guess if you had a team with the starting offense and the backup defense playing against the starting defense and the backup offense, who would win? Just trying to get a feel for which squad looks better this year. Thank you and love the show.
Well, I think the starting defense against the backup offense has an advantage. I think that would be the norm in most places. I think the backup defense probably has a little more ability to compete with the starting offense, than the other way around. I would say right now. I mean, you know, this has been a year where the defense has had a pretty good camp, and they just keep coming together, it looks like, and playing fast and playing with, you know, decent rotations and having freshmen step up in the secondary and at linebacker, I would give the edge probably to the defense.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you on that one, Dan, just at this point. What's going, we saw the scrimmage. Just all the bodies in there, they seem to take it to them. There's individual plays on offense where we saw Dory Jackson kind of go crazy when they were putting those packages in for him. But really in the live scrimmage, it was, that defensive front kind of caused so many problems. It was just hard for the offense to get anything going.
Yeah. I mean, they're playing faster and that's a big deal. I think, you know, that last year they basically read and reacted and held on. And this year they're going after people and they're using, you know, the skills that, you know, the returning linemen have. They're using the skill set that Sua Cravens has. They're not afraid to blitz. And I think a big part of that is they're not afraid to play man. And if you can come up and play man and really press cover and, you know, hold guys up and not let them get into their routes and all that for a couple of 3 seconds, they think they've got a chance to get to the quarterback. And with the personnel they've got now, you know, they probably do. And, that's a whole different, you know, that's just a completely different mindset from last year. So that playing fast and going, you know, taking people out of their game. That's something you wish you could have seen last year, but it does seem like it, you know, it's coming true this year.
All right, Dan. Well, great stuff. I'm glad we could kind of address all the current issues. We wanted to talk more about football, so I think we were able to do that. We'll be back at practice Wednesday morning, and all the players will be available, and I think we'll be talking about football again, Dan, so it should be good.
Yeah, I can't wait. I think tomorrow will be a better day for everybody involved in terms of just focusing on football. And this is a difficult week because we're going to game week practicing schedule because they started class. So instead of normally maybe you get 3 weeks before you get into class and then 1 week to get ready for the game, it's 2 weeks before class and then 2 weeks before the game. And yet we're in a game week schedule with the early morning practices, but there's no game this week. So it's kind of like a bye week. So you're sort of looking at Arkansas State and you're sort of looking at the game plan, but it's really not, you know, the same thing as where it's happening this week. So it probably isn't the easiest for these kids to focus on exactly what they're focusing on this week. It's not camp anymore, and it's not exactly game week. So it'll be interesting to see how they get through this week and, you know, put it all together.
All right. Well, great stuff, Dan. Thanks again for coming on the show. Really appreciate getting all your insights. It was fun.
That was fun, exactly. And more good questions. Thank you, guys. Those are fun to, you know, figure out.
Yeah, we do our best. We try to do it. All right, well, thanks, Dan, and everyone else. Thank you very much for listening to the Peristyle Podcast. We're going to talk to you next time, and here's a quick message from Michael Moline Real Estate.
Most people know that buying or selling real estate is no small undertaking. Understanding the market value of your home, pricing, advertising, closing, and perhaps even selling personal property along the way are all examples of the real estate journey. And Michael Moline Real Estate has the experience to help make that journey an enjoyable one. Southern California real estate inventories are at historic lows, so there is no better time than now to sell your residential property. Whether you're moving into a bigger home or downsizing, personal property is often a component of the real estate transaction. Michael Moline Real Estate has industry expertise to help you with both your real property and your personal property as you get ready to transition. Michael Moline Real Estate specializes in properties located on the west side of Los Angeles and the southern San Fernando Valley communities. Allow Michael Moline Real Estate to give you a free comparative market analysis and home valuation so you know how much your home is worth today. Contact Michael Moline at michaelmolinerealestate.com. That's Michael, M-O-L-I-N-E, realestate.com.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.